their organs, they get rid of their choirs. So you have a tiny little Reformed Baptist movement in this country of about 24 dead musicless churches.
Because if you have any wavering in your confidence about the integrity of your translation of the Bible, it'll suck the conviction right out of your heart.
And that leads to some very interesting, heretical, and very important conclusions.
Hello, this is Pastor Jeff Riddle from Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia, and welcome to another episode of Word Magazine, this occasional podcast on various issues related to theology, doctrine. Often we do podcasts related to the text of Scripture, and that will be our subject today. Today is December the 8th of 2015. And it is a chilly morning here in central Virginia, but a good time to sit down with a cup of coffee and record another Word Magazine. Wasn't planning on doing a Word Magazine this week, but was prompted to do one by receiving an email on Sunday from a brother in the UK who sent me a link to a YouTube video from Pastor Robert Truelove, who's in the Atlanta, Georgia area, another Reformed Baptist pastor. And in the YouTube video, Robert Truelove offers a debate challenge to Reformed Baptist apologist James White. He challenges James White to debate Dr. Maurice Robinson. Dr. Robinson is a research professor at Southeastern Seminary in Wake Forest, North Carolina, and a well-known advocate of the so-called Byzantine text position. I've had the opportunity to meet Dr. Robinson on a couple of occasions, sat with him at a meal at an Evangelical Theological Society meeting up in Providence, Rhode Island a couple of years ago. And then I met him when I attended the Pericope Adulteri conference that was held at Southeastern. Very charitable man, very nice man. And very able man, someone who is really a bona fide academic text critic. He knows the field and, again, has adopted a Byzantine text position. I don't know if the debate between James White and Dr. Robinson will take place. I thought it was a bit strange for Robert Truelove to be announcing this and not for Dr. Robinson to have worked directly with James White. I don't know about that. But I was struck in the video by a couple of things. One was the issue of definitions. Robert Truelove was claiming that the terms traditional text and ecclesiastical text should be used exclusively for those who hold to the majority text position or the Byzantine text position. That's a term that I have typically used to refer to those who hold to the Textus Receptus. And so there was a kind of a question about what's the proper terminology to use for various positions. And so I thought it might be worthwhile to do a video on this. I'd also received an email a couple of weeks ago from another brother, and he was telling me about a new Facebook group that's called Confessional Bibliology. There's also a related website. And by the way, I'm going to put a link to the Robert Truelove video and to the Confessional Bibliology website on my blog, jeffriddle.net. And you can watch the Truelove video and you can check out the website and the Facebook page for Confessional Bibliology if you'd like. But he had told me, this brother who had sent me the email about the Facebook group had told me that there had been discussions there about definitions. I think even Robert Trulove had been part of that conversation. So I thought it might be worthwhile to do a Word Magazine on sort of defining the various groups. And I'm going to suggest there are three groups, or three positions, three camps related to the texts of the New Testament. And then I'm going to suggest perhaps a new title for those who hold to the position that I think I hold to, and that is defending the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Bible and the Textus Receptus of the New Testament. Before I get to those definitions, though, I want to reflect a little bit on some of the background for Robert Trulove's challenge to James White and his interactions with James White. Back in July of 2015, this summer, I did two Word Magazines, episodes numbers 40 and 41, responding to a ScreenFlow video that James White had done titled The Ecclesiastical Text, or concerns that he had relating to the ecclesiastical text. And that had arisen, apparently, out of some exchanges that James White had had with Robert Trulove. Robert Trulove had posted to a different, I think, Reformed discussion group or forum some critiques of James White and was questioning the wisdom of him doing his presentations on modern text criticism before Muslim audiences. And he was suggesting that the Muslim apologists were actually using James White's presentations on text criticism to undermine the authority of the New Testament. And James White took offense at that, and he went on a bit of a little mini tirade against Reformed people who were criticizing his embrace of the modern text. Interestingly enough, though, he sort of, instead of interacting with Robert Trulove, or instead of interacting with confessional Reformed Christians who critique the modern critical text, people, say, who are in the Trinitarian Bible Society, instead of dealing with those kinds of persons, instead, in the dividing lines that he put out in early August, he took on a couple of KJV-onlyists, one named Thomas Ross, another named Kent Brandenburg. And I was bothered by this because he implied that these men, Thomas Ross and Kent Brandenburg, were, and he used this term several times, Reformed KJV-onlyists. And he tried to label anyone who was defending the traditional text or ecclesiastical text as being Reformed KJV onlyists, and that just isn't the case. That, as far as I know, there are no so-called Reformed or confessional KJV onlyists. Thomas Ross and Kent Brandenburg are not Calvinists. They're not Reformed. They're independent fundamental Baptists who are KJV onlyists. And I believe, we'll address this a little bit later, that the KJV-only position is antithetical to a Reformed confessional position. You can't really hold to the Westminster Confession of Faith or the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith and be a KJV-onlyist, because in Chapter 1 on Scripture, it clearly states that we hold that the Scriptures are inspired in the original languages, in Hebrew and Greek. There's a place for translations. The confession discusses that. But as I understand it, a true KJV-only position believes that the KJV, an English translation, was specially inspired. And again, that would contradict Chapter 1 of the Reformed Confessions, whether Westminster Confession or the Second London Baptist Confession. James White sort of muddied the waters, and at the time I had prepared and written kind of a script for another Word Magazine. I was going to do yet another response to his interactions with KJV-onlyists, And I decided at the time not to do that, probably for two reasons. One was that I was busy preparing for a trip to Malaysia and Hong Kong, where I was going to be speaking in a couple of conferences, and so I didn't have time to prepare the response. But probably more importantly, secondly, I was beginning to think that it was not a wise stewardship of my time to attempt to respond to James White. And so I just sort of left it alone. But now some of these issues have sort of come back, and so I want to address it now in a way by talking about the whole issue of definitions, because part of the issue with James White was not really properly defining the difference between a KJV onlyist and someone who holds to a Reformed confessional position. Actually, when I was thinking about James White's interaction with KJV onlyists back earlier this summer, I thought about a book review that I had read from Theodore Letus. In Letus's 1997 book, The Ecclesiastical Text, at the end of it, he has several book reviews that he had done. And one of the book reviews that he had published was a combined book review of James White's KJV only controversy, the first edition, 1995, and Gail Ripplinger's New Age Versions, which was published in 1993. And you might think that's an odd, it's an odd piece to do a combined book review of James White's book, which was critiquing Gail Ripplinger's book, to review them together. But Letus's review is pretty caustic, and he is particularly pointing out that James White was sort of maybe taking the low-hanging fruit in taking on Gail Ripplinger and maybe giving her position too much credence by giving it so much attention. Now, let me just read the opening to Letus's review of James White and Gail Ripplinger. I'll post this as well to jeffriddle.net. The review begins, "James White and Gail Ripplinger are both cut from the same bolt of cloth. Hence the old saying holds true, quote, it takes one to know one, end quote. They are, in fact, quote, kissing cousins, end quote, in terms of religious genus. The very fact that White felt Ripplinger's book, New Age Versions, merited an entire book-length reply indicates that he must have felt that her propositions were compelling enough to deserve such treatment. In a footnote, he adds, he does, of course, treat other authors as well as the movement itself, though he provides no historical analysis or even sociological analysis of the roots of this movement and its advocates. I believe this is because it is all rather close to his own religious point of reference. Returning to the review, he adds, in other words, her superficial treatment of the subject was, nevertheless, disturbing enough for him to treat it seriously. This speaks as much about his grasp of the subject, or lack of, as it does about Ripplinger's effort." So I thought of that review when I thought about James White responding to Thomas Ross and Kent Brandenburg, and also some of his recent responses to Gail Ripplinger and Kent Hovind. Sometimes those responses kind of actually muddy the waters rather than dealing with, I think, serious intellectual, theological critiques of the wisdom of Reformed, evangelical, confessional Christians embracing the modern critical text. So with that background having been covered, I want to move on to definitions. That's really the purpose for this Word magazine. And again, I want to suggest that there are three basic camps with regard to the original language text of the New Testament. Now, I'm going to limit this discussion primarily to the New Testament. And, of course, there are issues about the text of the Old Testament, issues about text of the New Testament. But we're going to limit it here, these three camps, to the Greek text of the New Testament. What is the proper Greek text of the New Testament? What is the text that pastors should study and preach from, that pastors and scholars should study and do theological study of, what text should be the basis for translations that are read in personal devotion, that are read in public and corporate worship. And I'm going to suggest there are, again, three camps, three positions. First position are those who affirm the so-called modern critical text. This approach, the modern critical text approach, is based on modern academic text criticism. And it's based on an approach that is called reasoned eclecticism, that they believe that using rational methods, that they can choose various readings from ancient manuscripts to assemble a modern critical text. This position has its roots in the 19th century in what is called modern historical critical study of the Bible. It initially saw as its goal the restoration of the primitive or the original text of the New Testament, which it believed had become corrupted over time. Perhaps this approach is best reflected in the title of Bruce Metzger's influential textbook. And the title of that textbook was The Text of the New Testament, Its Transmission, Corruption, and Restoration. And that really says it all. The modern critical text position believes that in the transmission of the New Testament, it was corrupted, and now modern scientific text critics are needed to come in with the white lab coats and restore it to its pristine, primitive, original position. By the way, Metzger's influential textbook was read by many seminarians in the late 20th century on into the 21st century. That book is now in its fourth edition, although Dr. Metzger has passed away. The book is now edited or co-edited by Bart Ehrman, of all people. This approach, again, although it developed among basically liberal Protestants in the 19th century, was embraced by evangelicals in the 19th century as well. This embrace of this approach was led by Princeton scholar B.B. Warfield, and he developed as well the concept of inerrancy, that the Bible is inerrant in the original autographs. And that it had become corrupted through transmission, and the work of text criticism is to restore the original text, the original autograph. One of the problems with the modern critical text position is that in contemporary academic text criticism, that original goal of text criticism to find the original autograph has basically been abandoned. Most modern academic text critics believe that it is essentially impossible for text critics to discover the original text. They now talk about establishing what they call the initial text, and by that they mean attempting to reconstruct the text of the New Testament as far back as they can go. That usually means saying we can establish the text as it existed sometime between AD 200 and 400. Some text scholars also add with a kind of a postmodern twist that it's even inappropriate to think that we can establish the original text of Scripture. They say that all texts of Scripture are valid, even those who are rejected by the Orthodox or the majority. D.C. Parker, a leading modern text critic in Birmingham, England, has spoken about living texts of the Bible, plural, so that all readings are legitimate and have a legitimate place at the table. Those who are in the modern critical text camp, they use a printed edition of the New Testament that is called the Modern Critical Text. There are two publications of this. One is called the Nestle Aland edition. It's published by the German Bible Society. It's now in its 28th edition. Was the last most recent updating of it was in 2012. It began in 1898. The second published edition is called the United Bible Society's Greek New Testament. It's now in its fifth revised edition, the most recent edition being published in 2014. The text of the Nestle Aland and the United Bible Society's Greek New Testament are exactly the same. The texts are exactly the same. They've been exactly the same since 1979. The apparatus, the critical apparatus that lists the various variants and different readings, the apparatus are different in the two editions, but the text of the New Testament is the same. So people who embrace the modern critical text position use either the Nestle Aland or the United Bible Society's Greek New Testament. And that's true in all mainline Protestant seminaries, or if you were to study New Testament Greek in an American university or a European university, you would use one of these two Bibles. It's also true in all evangelical seminaries. If you were to study New Testament or New Testament Greek at Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia, or the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, or more on the left wing, Fuller Seminary in California, or Reformed Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, or Orlando, Florida, or wherever, you would use this modern critical text. And the modern critical text is one that, again, challenges the traditional text, particularly the Textus Receptus of the New Testament. It places double brackets around what is called the traditional ending of Mark 16, 9 through 20. It puts double brackets around the so-called pericope adulteri, the woman caught in adultery passage, John 7:53 through 8:11. It also so relegates numerous other verses to the footnotes or phrases, words. So that is the modern critical text, again, coming out of the Enlightenment, coming out of the rise of modern historical criticism applied to the Bible. In this camp, one finds, again, all modern academic scholars, like Bart Ehrman, who teaches at the University of North Carolina. One also finds all mainline Protestant scholars, like the late Bruce Metzger, who taught at Princeton Seminary. And one also finds most broad evangelicals in this camp, like Wayne Grudem, John Piper, D.A. Carson, Dan Wallace, and then ministers who are in the broad evangelical stream, or even some who are would take the title of being Reformed, like apologist James White. They're in the modern critical text camp. The second of these three camps or positions would be those who affirm the majority text or the Byzantine text. And there is a little bit of a nuance between the majority text position and the Byzantine text position, but they're close enough that we'll put them in this same camp together. One might say that this view was reflected in the work of Dean Bergen, the Anglican churchman and ardent critic of Westcott and Hort's Greek New Testament, which was published in 1881, and also a very ardent critic of the revision committee that produced the revised English version in 1881, one of the first major challenges to the King James Version. This view would argue that the proper text of the New Testament should be that reflected in the vast majority of extant Greek manuscripts. This is also essentially what we could call a restorationist approach. The modern critical text position is a restoration approach, trying to restore the proper or primitive texts of the New Testament. This is also restorationist in that it's saying the Textus Receptus is corrupt, and so we need to restore it using the vast majority of extant manuscripts as the basis for this restoration. The so-called majority text position was championed in the 1970s and 1980s, particularly by a group of scholars related to Dallas Seminary, and those in the majority text camp include Arthur Farstad, Zane Hodges, and Wilbur Pickering. In the 1980s, Farstad and Hodges published The Greek New Testament According to the Majority Text. The copy I have is a second edition of this work, dated 1985 and published by Thomas Nelson. Farstad also served as the general editor of the New King James Version, which was completed in 1982. And I think part of the background for this was a reaction against the rise of modern translations that were based on the modern critical text, and there were some conservative men who felt that the traditional text needed to be defended. They weren't defending the Textus Receptus necessarily, but the majority text. Although, if you read through the New King James Version, whatever its faults might be, it's not really a translation based on the majority text, but it's a translation based on the Textus Receptus. Nevertheless, Farstad and Hodges were defenders of the majority text. Also, as I've already mentioned, Southern Baptist scholar Dr. Maurice Robinson, with his collaborator William G. Pierpont, also advocated for what they called the Byzantine text. And they published an edition of this in 1991, and then another edition of it that is still out there, which was published in 2005. Both the Farstad-Hodges Greek New Testament According to the Majority Text and the Robinson-Pierpont Greek New Testament in the Byzantine text form include traditional passages like the longer ending of Mark and the Pericope Adulteri. They're not in double brackets because they appear in the majority text tradition. However, they depart from the Textus Receptus in rejecting passages like Acts 8:37, the confession of the Ethiopian eunuch, and passages like the Coma Johanneum, the three heavenly witnesses in 1 John 5, 7, and 8. There are, however, some slight differences between the Farstad-Hodges majority text and the Robinson-Pierpont Byzantine text. One example of this, beyond some variations in the Greek text of the various books, is simply the canonical order that both the books present. Farstad and Hodges follow the now standard order, the same as that found in the Textus Receptus and in most printed translations of the Bible. The Robinson-Pierpont 2005 Byzantine Greek New Testament, however, has the order as the Gospels, then it has Acts, then it has the Catholic Epistles, then it has the Pauline epistles, with Hebrews put among the Pauline epistles, but located after 2 Thessalonians and before 1 Timothy, and then it has Revelation. Both the Farstad-Hodges and the Robinson-Pierpont also take the ending of Romans chapter 16, verses 25 through 27, and they move it to the ending of Romans 14. So they put it as Romans 14, verses 24 through 26, because that's the way it appears in the majority or the Byzantine text position. Again, as already mentioned, Farstad, Hodges, Pickering, Robinson would all be people who hold this position, and we can put apparently now Robert Truelove in this position, affirming the majority text or the Byzantine text. The third camp that we want to define would be those who affirm the Textus Receptus as the proper text of the Greek New Testament that should be the basis for preaching and scholarly study and for translation. This camp holds that the standard text of the New Testament should be the one that was first printed during the Reformation era and which came to be known as the Received Text or the Textus Receptus. It was first published by the Dutch humanist scholar Erasmus in 1516. He put it out in four other editions, 1519, 1522, 1527, 1535. Then this Greek text of the New Testament, the first to be published, the first to be given in a standard form and widely reproduced, was picked up by various Reformed pastors. Erasmus was, again, a Roman Catholic humanist, but it was picked up by Reformed pastors, like the man who is known as Stephanus, who published it in four editions. It was picked up by Theodore Beza, the successor of Calvin, who published it in numerous editions, including four influential folio editions in 1565, 1582, 1588, and 1598. It was Beza's edition of the Textus Receptus that was used by the King James Version translators. I think it was his 1598 edition. And it was these printed editions of the Textus Receptus that became the basis for all the Protestant translations in the various vernacular European languages in the Reformation, post-Reformation period. Including translations that were done in English. It was the basis of William Tyndale's New Testament in 1525 and in 1534, I think it was, second edition of his New Testament. The Trinitarian Bible Society continues to reprint an edition of the Textus Receptus that is largely based on Beza's 1598 edition. This Trinitarian Bible Society New Testament was edited by F.H.A. Scrivener, and it was published by Cambridge Press in 1894 and 1902. This position might be described as preservationist rather than restorationist. It does not attempt to assemble all the extant Greek manuscripts and to restore some lost text, but instead it says that the best text is that which, under the providence of God, was first put in a printed, standardized form during the Reformation period. This text, the Textus Receptus of the New Testament, includes, like the majority or Byzantine text, the longer ending of Mark and the Pericope Adulterae. But unlike the majority text or the Byzantine text, it preserves other readings like Acts 8:37 and the Coma Johanneum, 1 John 5:7 and 8. In this camp, one finds many conservative, Reformed Christians who desire closely to follow the classical Reformed confessions of faith. It is represented by modern preachers and scholars like Joel Beakey, Malcolm Watts, John Thackway, and others that are associated particularly with the Trinitarian Bible Society. Now, you'll notice with these three camps, I did not mention King James Version onlyism. And again, I sort of said this a little bit earlier. I think that I didn't list them because King James Version onlyism is not really a position about the original language text of the Bible. Someone who's a pure KJV onlyist could not affirm the Westminster Confession of Faith or the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith because those confessions affirm that the Bible is immediately inspired in the original languages. So Again, these are the three camps that I would suggest are the ones that are out there. Now, let me return for just a moment to the challenge that Robert Truelove gave. Is it inappropriate to use the word traditional text or ecclesiastical text for the TR position, those who believe that the Textus Receptus is the proper Greek text of the New Testament? Or should that term be used exclusively by those who hold to the majority text of the Byzantine text position? Certainly there is no copyright on the adjectives traditional or ecclesiastical. Ecclesiastical simply means, you know, having to do with the church. Traditional, you know, that which affirms tradition, that which conserves tradition. Robert Truelove mentions that Harvard scholar Chrisop Lake used the term ecclesiastical text to refer to the Byzantine or majority text. I actually looked that up. There is a reference to a very brief article. Actually, it's an appendix to a longer article that Lake and a couple of co-authors wrote for the Harvard Theological Review in 1928. And one little appendix in that was titled The Ecclesiastical Text. And he may have used that term for the majority or the Byzantine text position. As I understand it, Chrisop Lake was an advocate for the modern critical text. He was a well-known text critic in the early 20th century. The term traditional text, ecclesiastical text, in more modern parlance, was introduced by Theodore Letus. He wrote he has two collections of essays that are out there. One called The Majority Text that was published in 1987 and has three parts. Part one is Apologia for the Majority Text. Part two, Apologia for the Authorized Version. Part three, Apologia for the Textus Receptus and the Protestant Tradition. And so he was still thinking through things, I think, with this anthology, and was sort of blending together majority text defense and Textus Receptus defense, and seemed to be calling both of them a traditional text position. And then he had the 1997 collection of his essays titled The Ecclesiastical Text, where he seems to be defending again both the Byzantine text and the Textus Receptus and the King James Version in particular over against the modern critical text. Theodore Letus' positions were a re-articulation, a refinement of those of Edward F. Hills. And I picked up off my bookshelf Edward F. Hills' 1967 book, Believing Bible Study. And I looked at the chapter headings. It's interesting. Chapter 7 of that book is titled Dean Bergen and the Traditional New Testament Text. Chapter 8 is titled The Traditional, and then in parentheses, Byzantine New Testament Text. And then chapter 9 is The Textus Receptus, Received Text. And so I think you could make an argument, as Robert Truelove does, that Edward F. Hills and Theodore Letus use the term traditional text or ecclesiastical text to refer to the majority text, Byzantine text position. However, I don't think it's inappropriate to say that, to use the term as well, to refer to the TR position. And I think there's an argument that Letus and Hills also used the term in that way as well. In some ways, I think the TR position is better suited to be called the traditional text or ecclesiastical text position. For one thing, it's more holistic. The majority text, Byzantine text, is really just dealing with the New Testament. It doesn't really say anything about the Old Testament. I think Those who hold to the TR on a confessional basis typically also hold to defending the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Bible. And so it's a traditional text, both of the Old Testament and New Testament, that's being defended. Maybe, though, just to clarify things, I want to suggest perhaps a new term, and this would be a term for people who hold to the Masoretic text of the Hebrew Bible and the Textus Receptus of the Greek New Testament on the basis of their commitment to the Reformed confessions, whether if you're a Presbyterian, the Westminster Confession of Faith, or if you're a Baptist, the Second London Baptist Confession of Faith. And I would call it the confessional text position, or maybe the Reformed confessional text position. It appears that Robert Truelove has clarified his own position. He's now a majority text, Byzantine text advocate. I don't really think, though, that really resolves the problem if you're a Reformed confessional person. Is he really saying that it was the position of the framers of the Westminster Confession of Faith and the Second London Confession of Faith that they were majority text advocates, that they were Byzantine text advocates? It doesn't seem that really that whole idea developed until, we could say, Dean Bergen in the late 19th century, then in the mid to late 20th century with Farstad, Hodges, and Robinson. I don't really think that the particular Baptists who came up with the Second London Confession, or the Westminster Divines who came up with the Westminster Confession of Faith, I don't think they were advocates for a majority text or Byzantine text position. I believe that they affirmed the Textus Receptus. You still have the problem, if you're a majority text, Byzantine text advocate, you still have the problem with, and you're Reformed, with the fact that the proof texts that are used in these confessions are from, for the New Testament, are from the Textus Receptus. 1 John 5, 7, and 8, the Coma Johanneum is cited to affirm the Trinity. The longer ending of Mark is cited. And that wouldn't be a problem for majority texts, ecclesiastical texts, but the citation of the Coma Johanneum would be a challenge, and you would have to take some exception to that being listed as a proof text. You also have a problem if you embrace the majority text, Byzantine text. You also have some other problems, like which one of those texts is authoritative? Is it the Farstad Hodges edition, 1985? Is it the Robinson Pierpont edition? Is it some other edition? I know there's an online edition as well of the Byzantine text. I think that Pickering has put together. Which one is authoritative? Are you advocating that we change the canonical order and follow that which has been suggested by Robinson Pierpont? Are you suggesting that in modern translations of the Bible that the ending of Romans 16 should be moved to the ending of Romans 14? So you still have sort of continuing restorationist issues, even if you embrace the majority text / Byzantine text. Whereas I think if you adopt the Textus Receptus, or the Reformed confessional text position, you're able to deal with a traditional, stable, reliable text as the basis for your preaching and for your study. Well, I hope that this discussion has been helpful, and I'm going to try to use this new term, Reformed confessional text position. And again, hope this is helpful for others, and we will look forward to talking to you later when we do another Word Next. Take care, and God bless. Your praise inspire, Lord.
see the spies and